Welcome to the Unscripted SEO Interview Podcast. Yes, it's 100% unscripted, 100% unrehearsed, 100% unedited, and 100% real. I'm your host, Mark A. Preston. And our guest this week is somebody that I don't really know that well, even though he's been around in the industry quite a while. And you'll recognize him as is Joe Davis from Fat Joe. Hi, Joe. Do you want to introduce yourself to the people watching and listening and give a bit of an overview of your background in the industry and what you do now, where you've come from, the sort of the short version of your career?
Sure. So, I've been an SEO since around 2006. So quite a while now. I started as a just an internet marketing junior. I got a job at a brand that sold vending machines. And on the side, I was kind of like getting into affiliate websites and learning more about that kind of thing. I had a few jobs in SEO, went freelance. Then I joined an SEO agency and learned about selling SEO, ranking multiple clients in lots of different industries before launching Fat Joe, which is my SEO marketplace. And I launched that in 2013. And yeah, we've been going 10 years now. And that's where I spend most of my time.
Right. How did you come up with the brand name? Because either you've lost an awful lot of weight or it just sprung out of your head. How did you come up with that brand name?
Yeah, so we were looking at names, as you do, just on Google. We were looking at like gangster names and names that associate with Joe, because my business partner is also called Joe. So we thought it'd be quite cool to incorporate our name a little bit. And for some reason, we ended up on Fat Joe, which is, you know, a bit of a strange one, but we wanted it to stick out. We wanted it to stand out amongst the crowd of the so many, you know, link building companies that are called, you know, Link Company, UK Links, Linkology, whatever they're called, you know, boring names. So we wanted something a bit more creative. And we ended up on Fat Joe, and it turns out it's actually a rapper's name as well, which is, you know, caused us a few problems over the years. But I think we're beating him now. We're beating him. We're number one for Fat Joe. So,
well, it's certainly memorable, and I think a lot of the industry know who you are anyway. But
yeah,
what would you say if you was to sum up Fat Joe as a brand? What would you say you are?
We're an SEO marketplace. So one way to describe us would be the agency for agencies. So when agencies need deliverables such as content or link building or video, press releases, local SEO citations, that kind of thing, they come to us for the deliverable. So it's They get no consulting. They just get the end product that they can resell to their clients. I'd say in a word or in a sentence or a phrase, it's SEO marketplace for agencies.
Right. And what would you say has been the biggest contributor to the growth and success of your, whether it's a white label agency or marketplace?
I'd say the biggest contributor to success has been we've never lost focus on our customer avatar. So me and my business partner, we used to work in an SEO agency, and we had the struggles of deliverables. So we were outsourcing a little bit. We were hiring sometimes, and we never managed to get the sweet spot of quality and cost within the client budget. So, you know, we were using outsourced providers on Upwork, Fiverr. We were using offshore companies, and we were getting really mixed results with their deliverables and their resellable products. So we knew the pain points that agencies had. We knew the pain points of agencies need quality links. They need quality content at scale. And they need a company they can really trust. They need a company they can phone. They need a company that's going to answer every email, that's going to deliver things in a nice report, not in horrible Excel sheets, you know. So we never lost focus on our exact customer avatar, and we've just doubled down on what agencies want, agencies need. We speak a lot to our customers about what are your biggest pain points, you know, what are your problems that you're facing every day, and whatever those are, we try and solve them. Because, you know, we don't just be known as a link building company or just a content company. We want to be known as problem solvers for agencies.
Right. Because perception in the wider community has been that, you know, you go to Fat Joe if you want some cheap links. And yeah. I think that mindset is how are you and have you overcome that sort of mindset in the industry?
Yeah, I'll get that. I mean, we used to be cheap, but we're not as cheap anymore. We've invested a lot more into our outreach and into our, you know, our baseline quality of websites. So we're not that cheap anymore. We're trying to get away from that. What would you call it? That perception of our brand, moving more into a premium marketplace. And that's just, I mean, you've got to try it to know for sure, but we're just trying to improve our products every single day. And the agencies that use us, you know, are getting great results, and their clients are happy. And the feedback has just been great. Obviously, we're not for everyone, and we know that. Usually, it's typically, you know, a brand or an affiliate with a niche website that really wants a specific kind of link or specific kind of link building. They might not be happy with the kind of links we can get for them. They might want something a bit more custom and a bit more not off the shelf. So that's fine. You know, we know we're not for everyone, but for agencies, we know where we stand in the market, you know.
So this, just to get an overview of everything, would you say it's just like a shop? You're just like a shopping cart for agencies. Is that how to describe it?
Yeah, I'd say so. Yeah. Agencies will be doing the consulting and the campaign planning, and they'll be talking to the client, reporting to the client, but then they need somewhere or a vendor who can give them the deliverables for their campaign. So we fit in that respect. So there's no contracts, there's no phone calls, there's no meetings. The agencies just give us their inputs, which will be based on the campaign they've designed, and we deliver them the outputs or the deliverables. So yeah, we're essentially a shopping cart or a marketplace, whichever word you want to use. But yeah, I'd say that's a good way to describe it.
Okay. And over the years on running the marketplace, how have you seen your customers change and evolve in what they're asking you for?
Yeah, so back in 2013, when we first started, we weren't even doing blogger outreach, which is essentially guest posts. We were creating like Web 2.0 hubs, you know, like on I even forget what the websites are called now, but you can essentially create a profile on a website. And we wrote an article on it, linked back to the client. And they used to call it link wheel and link pyramids. And they were very old style link strategies, but they kind of worked. So agencies were ordering that like happily. And we got to a point maybe in 2014 where, you know, that weren't really cutting the mustard, really. You needed a high quality outreach to real websites. And agencies, to begin with, in the first few years, were just interested in, you know, does it tick the box of domain authority, or does it tick the box of referring domains or traffic? They were looking at metrics over, you know, the actual quality of the site. In more recent years, agencies are taking a more holistic approach to their link building. They're looking at more than just numbers. They're looking at, right, is this a real blog? Has it got a real blogger behind it? Have they got social profiles? What's the traffic like? Let's look at their other content. You know, are they just link sellers? Do they just, you know, sell a load of links and they're just abusing their own blog? So agencies are looking at all those kind of things. And we also need to move with that expectation because, quite rightly so, you know, we don't want to be landing links on blogs that are just, you know, selling links or they're just abusing their own blog with irrelevant content. We want to get them, you know, real bloggers with real genuine social profiles, genuine followers, genuine readers, genuine traffic. So yeah, we've seen the movement towards that. And I think with the, especially with the introduction of AI stuff coming out recently, we're seeing more of a demand for real content, for real websites. Like real has got more value now because anyone can just create an AI website or AI content. So that's the shift we're seeing very recently.
So you mentioned AI there. What's your personal view on the whole AI content discussion that's going on at the moment?
Yeah, well, it's interesting. It's really interesting because when Jasper first came out, or the very first few AI tools, it was very easy to dismiss and go, it's never going to take off. You know, it's so cumbersome. It's so wrong. It's hallucinating. It's not giving real facts or content. And now, even within the past couple of months, we've seen such a breakthrough in the content AI can produce, even from ChatGPT. But there's other tools such as Koala Writer. I think Jasper are about to release an article tool as well, which will be more about one-click article, you know, generation. And the problem with that is it means that content will become essentially free. It will become the cost of however much your subscription is to Jasper or Koala Writer or ChatGPT. So that means the internet is going to get filled with a load more content than we've been experiencing recently. It's going to be even more, not spam, but potentially spam, but it's just going to be a lot of content. And that means Google's going to have a lot more content to decide what to rank. And that means that links are going to become more important than ever because it needs to decide which content should it rank. Now, AI-generated content, unless it's, you know, unless it's been carefully curated, carefully edited, carefully constructed for the searcher, I don't think it's going to stand up against, you know, a human crafted article. That's just my personal opinion. You know, you can't beat a human's experience, a human's even a human's humor that they put into the article. So yeah, I think we're going to see a surge in mass amounts of content being published on the internet, but that will mean that real content, real link building is going to be more valuable than ever.
Yeah.
That's my personal opinion.
Yeah. I see it as these AI tools and ChatGPT and everything. That's now the new baseline of content quality.
Yes.
That is the new baseline. And people really need to add value, not to just what it spits out, but what's out there? Because as you described, the internet is just going to get full of this low. Well, it's not even low quality content anymore. You know, it reads well. You know, it does.
Yeah, yeah.
Job, and I think the whole industry needs to step up the game. And I think on the content side, when you are looking at the whole content and everything in the blogger outreach and guest blogging and everything, how do you approach that?
In terms of link building?
Yes.
So we're sticking to a human, 100% human-only content policy. That's our stance on it for now. So all of our link building, the content... For example, if we do any guest posting or niche edits, we're using 100% human content, and we check that using AI detection tools such as Originality, but we also check it using Google Docs. All of our writers use Google Docs to write. And if they've genuinely wrote the article, Google Docs will have an edit history, which shows each sentence being written, you know, two sentences every minute or three sentences every minute. Like, it will be a slow, a slow buildup of the article rather than lots of blocks of text being pasted in. So we have those kind of checks in place. Now, our writers know that we're checking this. So our writers are very much on our side, that they want to be human writers, because obviously being a writer, you respect the craft of writing. They don't want this to all turn to AI. There is a place for AI content. I really do think there is a place for it. But I don't think it's going to be for everything. So there's going to be a lot of content out there that humans are going to want experience. You know, a searcher will want to read content from a human. And there's, you know, there's certain content, like, for example, an easy example is like recipes. You know, a human doesn't mind that a robot has wrote a recipe, or a human doesn't mind that a robot has wrote a Wikipedia page about the World War II. You know, something like that would be okay for a robot to write. But if you're searching for, you know, the best vacuum cleaner, for example, you want a human experience, or the best things to do in Milan, you want an experience kind of article. So I think there's going to be a place for both sides, but Google are going to try and solve that with EAT. I think they're going to look for content that is written in the language of, I did this, I think this, with, you know, images, original images, that kind of thing, that a robot just can't reproduce.
So do you think having a person as an authority that's named within the blogs, do you think that's going to have a massive impact for, like, respect and trust values and everything? So these blogs citing a certain person, so if a certain person has written it, you know, like the old author authority type of thing.
Yeah.
Do you think that's the future?
Yeah, 100%. So I think EAT is going to play a massive part. So if I was Google and I'm looking at an article, I want to see that it's got an author. I want to see that author has got maybe a link to a LinkedIn profile or some kind of professional body, or even just the title of that person is something relevant to the topic. You know, if I'm reading an article about health, you know, an illness, for example, I want to see that the author, or at least there's someone that proofread it, was a doctor or within the health industry. You know, so it really makes sense. Like, if I was Google, that's the way I would filter at least a lot of the content. You know, if it hasn't got that, I'm not going to consider it for anywhere near page one. And then the second thing would be the amount of links that piece of content has got from other authoritative websites. That's the only way you're going to sort from this sea of content now, is going to be, has it been written by someone who knows what they're talking about, and does other people think that it's good? And the way that they decide that is through links.
Yeah. Well, you are renowned for links, as in a brand. So if we move the subject conversation on to more link building type of questions. Now, does the whole blogger outreach, it's not a technique, strategy, whatever you want to call it, is it still as powerful as it ever was?
I mean, I'm very biased, because obviously we sell links and we sell those kind of links. I think that the honest answer is Google are trying to weigh a lot more into what the content is about, who it was written by. Like I said earlier, I think they are trying to weigh EAT a lot more, and they're trying to look at the brand equity. So they're trying to look at, like, is this written by, is this content on a website which is trusted? I think they're trying to weigh a lot more on that. That being said, I do think links are still one of the most important ranking factors, if not the most important, in terms of ranking a web page, getting it higher in the rankings. Like, that primitive task, I think link building is one of the things, probably one of the main things you should look at. But yeah, I still think that they're just as important. There are other link building methods. So, for example, we do blogger outreach and we do niche edits. Bloggers are the linkerati of the web. You know, there's no one linking like bloggers. So we think, looking from a natural standpoint, these are the people you want to get your links from. Obviously, there is a higher tier of link, which is, you know, media placements, newspapers, that kind of thing. I'm not fully convinced that newspaper links are amazing. You know, everyone sort of shouts about them as if you really need to try and get links from newspapers or these really high-end publications. I don't think they're going to do any harm, and they can certainly help your brand in authority. But for the bulk of ongoing link building, getting links from bloggers recommending your service, your brand, or talking about your content, I think they're the signals that Google are looking at, rather than you being cited for a press story or something like that. So yeah, to answer your question, I think, yeah, links are still as important, but I think Google are trying very hard to look at other signals as well now.
So if you was to look at blogger outreach versus digital PR, what would you personally believe is the strongest? As in impact?
Well, yeah. If it's a hard one to answer, because I thought about this before. If someone had a gun to my head and said, you've got to pick one you can only pick one type of link building, blogger outreach or digital PR, for your website, for it to rank, I would pick blogger outreach. Only because I think the value of the link may be less in terms of authority. So you might be getting a link from, for example, if you sell, you're a gardening e-commerce store and you get a link off a DR30 gardening blog. It's relevant, it's a recommendation. Google has seen it as, right, gardening blog to gardening e-commerce store. That's relevant. Let's give it some value. Whereas if that gardening e-commerce store got a link from, you know, the Daily Mirror about a statistic in gardening, I don't think that has as much value in terms of ranking equity. I think long term, the bulk of your links should come from recommendations within blogs. You know, the majority of your backlink profile should come from recommendations, contextual within content from bloggers. Right. That would be my personal opinion.
Right. Now, something I've personally thought about with the whole digital PR side of things, well, you are being cited or linked to whatever you want on these news-related websites, but the word news, I mean, you don't have a news story that drags on for 2 years. It has a short minimum lifespan. And yep. Personally, I think that unless it's a continuous thing, surely then links are going to get devalued over time because Google know that that's no longer relevant.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, so regarding yourself, I mean, what excites you about the industry now compared to when you started?
Well, I'm really excited about the AI stuff, you know, to the point of, we've started building some AI tools for marketers and SEOs. We've got a tool called Optimo. It's completely free, and we're just building out tools such as keyword research, topical map generator, content brief generator, brand name generator. So I'm really excited about how SEOs can integrate AI into their workflow. I think too many SEOs are worried about AI taking over their job or replacing them, but I think we should be more excited about how it's going to make our jobs not easier, but a lot more effective. You know, we can power our processes up with AI so easy. You know, it was only today I was doing some keyword research, and I exported a list from Ahrefs of keywords that I wanted to target, and I thought I need to write an article for each of these keywords. I pasted them into ChatGPT and just said, will you create an article title based on this keyword? And it did, you know, and the article title was really good. They may need a bit of editing, but just something like that I couldn't do 6 months ago, but I can do it today. That excites me. And I think the industry as well is growing up in terms of, we're not looking for hacks anymore. We're not looking for, you know, shortcuts. We're kind of looking at building a brand, you know. So even the niche site corner of like Twitter or the general SEO community, they're starting to realize, hang on, I'm not just building a little website that reviews vacuum cleaners anymore. I need to build a brand about the home, you know, and they're realizing this shift. And I think it's just a better way of looking at marketing, a better way of looking at business. We're not trying to hack Google. We're trying to be the best content in this for that particular topic. And Google will rank us over time, you know. So yeah, that's what I'm excited about. And I think things are getting more advanced with AI. You know, I don't think it's a scary thing. I think it's a good thing.
Yeah, I mean, for me, it's fantastic for the ideation and research part. And I know I've spoken to quite a lot of agency owners that says to me, Mark, I'm going back a few years and said, if we can ever get a solution to solve the mundane research manual tasks that half the team does, if something can replace that and do that job for us, then those people can concentrate on helping the businesses to grow rather than just doing all these tasks that doesn't necessarily create impact. And that's how I see it evolving. And it's not, but I mean, I get approached by a lot of more junior SEOs that are genuinely scared.
I saw your tweet this morning.
Yeah, I mean, they are genuinely scared of, afraid of, what can I do, you know, to like, I'm really interested in the industry. What can I do to make sure that my job's safe in like 2-5 years or whatever, you know? And this is the sort of mentality that's in. But for me, it's just about helping them to do their jobs better and giving them more information that you had to go digging for before. I mean, what's your view on the whole sort of future-proofing an SEO?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's not much has changed really, because we've got SEOs working for our company, and a lot of the mundane tasks, you know, a couple of years ago, they weren't doing themselves anyway. We were outsourcing it to, you know, we have VAs in the Philippines. So it's kind of like the same difference, really. We're outsourcing it to a different you know, process, really. Instead of going to a VA, it's going to AI. In terms of like future-proofing as an SEO, I think it's good to know a lot of the different parts of SEO. You know, if you're deep into technical, I think it'd be good to at least learn about the creative side of SEO, you know, coming up with the content ideas. How do we do the research? what makes a good article, you know, what makes a good user experience on the page, rather than getting too deep into the technical schema stuff and page speed. And then as well as that, if you're really on the technical side, like if you're, for example, completely over the right-hand side of creative, where you're just thinking about ideas of what's going to land links in newspapers, maybe it's a good idea to think about a little bit of the technical side. So I think future-proofing yourself in terms of learning new sides of the SEO coin is a good move. And marketing in general, I think it's good to know, you know, a lot of the crafts in marketing, even as far as like ads or social aspects, because everything connects, you know, every part of marketing connects to the other part. And I think it's just good to have that. You know, if something does change big time, which I don't think it will, which I don't think anyone's got anything to worry about, I don't think link builders or content writers or technical SEOs or PR people have got anything big to worry about. I just think it's peace of mind just to know a little bit of something else, you know, that just in case something does happen one day or something does change drastically, you've got something else in your toolkit that you can start applying.
So is Fat Joel as a marketplace agency, are you thinking about the future? Are you thinking about remodeling things or the approach, or due to maybe changes that's going to happen in the future? How are you as a marketplace handling that?
Yeah, so we're pretty much business as usual. We think that this AI content or this AI shift in marketing is going to cause a lot more demand for links, like I said, and a lot more demand for real content. There's a lot of business owners out there, and there's a lot of agencies who are very, very persistent that they want real human content, not only just for, you know, because they're scared that Google might derank it, but because they think it delivers a better quality. They think it delivers a more genuine result. So yeah, we're pretty bullish on the future of SEO link building content as it is, and we're thinking about AI as a tool to help our jobs, not to replace it. We are expanding into more services. So, you know, you might have seen on our website that we started doing some design video services. So we do explainer videos, video ads. We started doing, you know, other things such as keyword research service, press release, citations. We do a lot more than just the link building and content. So we're kind of branching out a little bit and diversifying in that way.
What would you say to the people that say, like, services like you offer, blogger outreach and that, is no different than paid links that obviously Google say they're against? What would you say to that?
Well, with paid links, there's a scale. So you could pay for a link on a website and it could say on the article, this is a paid advertorial. And then you'd have the article and the link. And you could, the link might even have a rel tag, which is sponsored. And then Google will look at that and go, no value or little value. Then you can have a link where the kind of links we get, where we collaborate with the blogger on a piece of content. We talk about what content we can write for their blog. What keywords are they trying to rank for? So we try and give them a piece of content they can potentially get traffic from. And they'll happily accept this content and post it within their, you know, within their feed, not on some, you know, contributor category or anything like that. They post it front and center of their blog, and they're proud of it. They'll even make edits to it. And there's no sign, there's nothing to say it's been paid for it or it's been contributed or even that it's a guest post. So we're really on that end of the strategy where we. Our posts look no different to any other of their posts. So there's no reason for anyone, any human, any search engine algorithm to detect that it was a solicited link.
Right.
So yeah.
Moving the subject away from content and links. Now, yeah. I was at Brighton SEO last year, and obviously your branding was just everywhere because you're one of the main sponsors of the conference. A couple of questions. One, why do you feel you need to sponsor conferences on a big scale? And two, do you get an ROI out of it?
Yeah, good question. We've always sponsored Brighton. So it's kind of like a tradition now. Like, we sponsored it in 2013 or 2014. We used to have a stand and speak to people. And those early sponsorships were very, very valuable to us because we were speaking to people face-to-face, speaking to our customers, meeting our customers. And our business just seemed to really grow from those first couple of sponsorships, especially in the UK. And then we did some in the US, and the same thing happened there. We never tracked ROI. We tried to one year, but it just failed miserably. It was really hard to do. I mean, we did like a tracking link, fatjoe.com/Brighton, but no one used it. So it was a bit of a waste of time. We just knew from the contacts we were speaking to that we landed, 5 to 10 decent clients in those early years. So ever since, we've just been a bit, sentimental to Brighton SEO, to sponsoring it every year. We're not completely sure on the ROI, but we just do it as an awareness branding exercise. And people find it weird if we don't sponsor it. People are always kind of like, oh, why not sponsoring it this year? So it's kind of like we set aside a budget every year that we think we're not going to make an ROI on this, or we're not even going to track it. We're just going to be at this conference, and whatever happens. And that's how we treat it now.
Right. Do you ever get like other events and the more smaller conferences approaching you to sponsor them?
Yeah. We get a lot. There's so many now in SEO that there's just so many conferences and events. We can't do them all because I just don't think, I don't think the ROI is there, if I'm being honest. But I think it's just good to do a few and just have your awareness around there. You know, the same as doing a TV ad. You know, you can't really track the ROI from it, but it just gets that awareness. It's like top of the funnel stuff. It gets even the young juniors who just start in SEO who go to Brighton, they're learning about our brand, and you know, they might ask us some questions or send an email or land on one of our blog posts. So it's good in that respect.
Yeah. Now, you mentioned one word there, brand. Now, How significant is brand building towards SEO impact?
I think it's very significant. I think Google completely used brand. You know, I don't know what the official term would be in the algorithm, but I think if you've got a big brand and they can measure that through lots of different ways, through, you know, brand mentions, even stuff like your anchor text. If most of your anchor text is coming through on your brand name, that's a great signal that your brand is bigger than a keyword. You know, it's like Apple. If you look at their anchor text, their biggest anchor text is Apple, not laptop. So you know, it's kind of like the brand is bigger than the industry, and I think that's an extreme example, but if you can build a brand even for your small site or small business, in terms of people are searching for your brand, people are linking to you by your brand name, I think that's a great signal for Google to trust your website as a whole. And then, you know, when you're publishing new content, you know, it gives you that favorable signal to rank. So yeah, I think brand is very important.
Right. So for people coming into the industry at the moment, what would you say they need to be thinking about?
Well, I think they need to be thinking about AI. I mean, 100%, they need to have an awareness about that. They're going to know about it, whether they like it or not anyway. But they're going to need to know, what kind of strategies and what kind of processes do I need to learn? And is AI involved? What tools do I need? Because things have changed a lot in the past 2 months. So, or even 3 months, any SEO course that was released, 6 months ago is going to be out of date now. I think the rule book has changed. The processes have changed. They'll get left behind if they're not using these new processes. I think they need to be very aware of what makes good content, what Google's deciding to rank. There's a lot of changes going on with Google now. Their SERP is going to change a lot. We've seen in the announcement recently. It's going to become a lot more visual. So this is going to change SEO's jobs in terms of not just the content side of things, but the visual side. So what images are we including? Do we need a custom image? Do we need to create something that's going to show up on the SERP in a certain way? What size do we need to put that? So I think they can learn a bit about technical SEO and that kind of thing. But I think it's like you said earlier, I think brand is going to play a big part. So it's going to be like overall marketing skills,
Right. So getting back onto Fat Joe, is there anything that you'll flatly refuse to offer as a future service?
Yeah. So we do. We refuse to offer quite a lot of things. We get customers asking. Usually they're not agencies. They're usually in-house at brand or maybe a niche site, website owner. They'll ask for a website with a particular trust flow, a certain amount of traffic. They want the blogger to have certain content on the website. They want the website to be over 6 years old. They'll have all these custom criteria. They want to pre-approve all the websites. So when it comes to something as custom as this, we point blank say, this isn't for you. We're for agencies and they want to order links at scale. We don't do pre-approvals. We don't do all these custom metrics. Here are the metrics we offer. You choose one of those. So, we refuse those kind of custom work. There's nothing off the table in terms of future services. As long as it's scalable and we can give a deliverable that's tangible, we will do it. One thing we do want to get into is, coming back to the digital PR stuff, we would like to offer that at some point. We think it's very, very hard to do in a scalable way. I think it's a very custom job, but that would be something we'd like to do. But we're having to refuse to do it at the moment.
Right. So do you think the whole business model and the reason for its success is because everything you do is totally scalable?
Yeah. I think it's the same reason McDonald's are so successful, is because, you can't go into McDonald's and you can't say, look, I want a Sunday roast and I want a chicken dinner and I want a pork belly. You can't say these things that they don't do, and that they won't do it for any amount of money. So they only do what they offer on the menu. And because of that, they've built strict processes around all those things. They can do them at scale and they don't veer from that for any amount of money, for any amount of complaining. They just do what they do. And if you don't like it, you've got to go somewhere else. So that's kind of how strict we've been, without being, we're not being rude to customers or anything. We're just saying, this is what we do. And if it works for you, great. If it doesn't, we know there's many other agencies out there that will do it. So, you can find them.
Right. Your customer base, are they all over the world now, or is it mainly in certain countries?
Yeah. So, mainly we're US, so we're about 70% US, and then the rest falls into UK, Australia, and we've got a bit of Europe, Canada, Ireland. Yeah, that pretty much makes up the most of it. There's like some Singapore, Malaysia. So yeah, it's all over the world.
Do you do anything in foreign languages outside of English?
Yeah, so we've got a multilingual outreach service, which we're really trying to scale. But at the moment, it's proving very hard because the industry outside of English language is very, it's a lot behind and it's a lot smaller. So to find, you know, German bloggers that blog about gardening, you know, it's a very small pool of bloggers. And then to outreach them with an email saying, can we collaborate with you on a guest post or a piece of content? They don't know what we're talking about. You know, they've never heard this before. They don't know what we're trying to get at them. They think it's a scam. So it's a lot harder to do, but we're trying to scale it and we do offer it, but it's quite expensive at the moment. But yeah, there's a lot of call for German links for some reason. The German SEO industry must be pretty hot right now.
Right. So you, as one of the founders of the company, what does your day-to-day look like?
So at the moment, I'm taking a role of it's basically like head of marketing. My partner has taken the role of head of tech. So together we kind of play the founder CEO role, but we've got our areas of responsibility. And with the head of marketing, I'm looking after the SEO guys, the ad guys, looking at new services we can offer, improving existing services, looking at our outreach team and how can we improve the processes and the success rate of new outreach efforts that we've got. Obviously, we're always trying to find bloggers to collaborate with, and you know we're trying to increase the quality of those bloggers as well, you know, and remove any bloggers that are abusing their own blog, because it happens as soon as bloggers know that they can make money from a blog, they just abuse it. So we have to keep looking out for these blogs that are, you know, getting low quality. And yeah, that makes up most of my day.
Right. So you mentioned quality there. Do you have a process in place for quality control throughout the process?
Yeah. So we've got an outreach team who also double up as their sort of relationship manager with the bloggers. So there might be bloggers that we use on a regular basis, bloggers that we work with in certain industries. And we have like 15 quality markers that we look at, and it ranges from very high-end things like DA or traffic, and it goes down to the meticulous things like, have they got a social profile? Is the social profile real? Like, do they post on it and do they get comments and do they genuinely post stuff? Have they got an About Me page and a real genuine intent for the blog? Is it a real person? Because a lot of these times, you know, bloggers can fake their persona, and it's very easy to find out. You know, if you do a lot of digging, you can find their LinkedIn, you can find, you know, real Facebook profiles. So we look at the amount of posts that have been published over like a year. If that's gone crazy, we know that they're potentially selling guest posts or they're doing something a little bit, you know, that they shouldn't be. We also look at external link ratio. So if their external link is very high, then there's potentially something going on there that's dodgy. Not always. But yeah, we look at all those things and we keep a track of all these things. Once every 3 months, we'll replenish like our relationships and get rid of any relationships that are no longer serving those quality markers.
Right. So when customers come to Fat Joe, they can more or less be guaranteed that the link isn't going to be on some sort of PBN. Is that basically, yes, in a nutshell, what you're saying? They're going to be on genuine sites.
Yeah, we aim for every link to be on a genuine website with all these markers hit. We understand that sometimes there may be some blogs that they may have fell by the wayside a little bit, that some of their content may not be as good. Sometimes we may not pick this up, and a customer may say, you know, I'm not quite happy with this one. And we'll say, okay, fair enough, and we've got 100% money-back guarantee or replacement policy. We'll just replace it and we'll find a new blogger for that. Obviously, working at scale, we can't catch everything, and sometimes there is the odd occasion where we need to replace something, or the link might go down, or something might happen. So, which is why we have this very flexible replacement or 100% money back guarantee policy.
Right. Now, on your website, I see that your services, or let's say your packages, are based on DA. So yep. The higher the DA, the more you pay. But what about everyone in the industry that's saying, well, DA is meaningless, but you're selling a service based on DA? How would you sort of explain that?
Yeah, I mean, it's a tough one because we understand that DA isn't the be-all and end-all. There could be a DA20 that's got a lot of traffic and a lot of different other signals, which make it probably more valuable than the DA50. There's a lot of nuance and there's a lot of different ways to analyze a site. We can't please every one of those metrics, and every SEO has got a different way of analyzing or measuring the quality of a website. We understand that, and we've just had to pick one metric and run with it, because DA, we understand, is quite an old metric as well. It's by, you know, the guys at Moz. But for some reason, it's always stuck around as a metric that agencies recognize, bloggers recognize. If there's anything untowards or anything that's wrong with a blog, like, for example, a blogger may have artificially inflated their DA, we'll look at that as an investigation. We do try and incorporate traffic as a secondary metric. So on DA 40 and 50, we guarantee minimum amounts of traffic, like 1,000 traffic at least. That gives it some kind of double-pronged guarantee that it is a genuine website. Whereas the lower DAs, you know, we don't really guarantee traffic. We just say that it will have some traffic. But yeah, it is an interesting question. It's something we're looking at because, like I said earlier, SEOs have got far more advanced recently with how they measure the quality of a website. And it's hard to really, you know, to really display that on a website, on a sales page, and say high quality or low quality. We've just got to say it's this metric or this metric, if that makes sense.
Yes. Oh, wow. The time's running away with us. Now, is there anything we haven't covered that you feel the audience really need to know?
I'll do a quick plug if you go for it. Well, if you go to askoptimo.com, I think a lot of your audience may be interested in the free AI tools there. As we've been talking about, you know, incorporating AI processes into your SEO workflows, there's a good place to start. But besides from that, I think we covered quite a lot there.
We have. And final question is, what sort of conversations would you like to have with people, and where can they find you?
So, yeah, you can find me at Fat Joe Davis on Twitter. And I speak about SEO, link building, agency life, AI stuff, general life, anything really. Follow me there and you can ask me any question, DM me. I'll happily reply.
Okay, well, on that note, thank you for your time. It's been a blast, and it's gone so quick. It's incredible.
It has, yeah. Enjoyed that.
Right, thanks a lot.
Cheers, Mark.
You've been listening to the Unscripted SEO Interview Podcast with me, Mark A. Preston. Join us next time as I interview more top SEO professionals.